American businesses need more skilled workers. How do we find the talent? How do we go about developing it? And how do we create opportunities for everyone in our society to get a good job? You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation, a nonprofit media company telling stories about the future of work, the future of education, and closing the job skills gap. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace. We talk with innovators, educators, decision makers, people with ideas and solutions for today's workforce challenges. On today's program, small businesses as a jobs creation engine.
If you look at the real history of economic mobility, it inevitably is about startups. It inevitably is about ideas and gumption and ambition.
We tend to look to major corporations to drive the job market. But according to Steve Strongen, head of research at Goldman Sachs Global Investments, small businesses are doing their part too. In fact, he believes that when it comes to job opportunities, they can actually level the playing field.
When you look at very young workers who maybe didn't graduate high school at the top of their class or didn't graduate at all, who went to community college and struggled, small businesses tend to be much better able to and much more willing to bring those people into the workforce than large corporations.
I started off our conversation by asking Strongen about how workers are being affected or even displaced by the rapid pace of changing technology. Strongen says there are actually two aspects of technological change.
One is the actual level of technological change, which, you know, depending on whose measures you use, either speed it up or slow down. Okay. The second is the degree to which that is changing the workforce, causing displacement either by job category or within job category. And one thing we've definitely seen over the last 40 years is we've seen a speed up in the ability of businesses to replace one group of functions with another. And so at the individual level, technological change seems much more rapid than it has in the past. On the other hand, when you look at the corporate level, not that same story isn't really that true.
Do you mean like in an office level or?
Well, if you think about the major tech companies you talk about today are the same major tech companies you were talking about 20 years ago. If you talk about a lot of the major software, it's the same software you were talking about 20 years ago. But when you go down to the level of the worker, you'll very often find that those functions have now been changed location, changed software, automated entirely. And so when you look at the micro level, you see a lot more displacement of individual than when you look at the big picture.
So what do you do with those displaced workers? I know that we talk a lot about training at Working Nation, but there's not one size fits all for all of these workers.
No, in fact, training solutions tend to work best for prime age workers in major urban environments where there's lots of jobs around. And the real question is helping the individuals rematch to those jobs. When you go outside of the prime worker group and you go outside of the major urban areas, the problem is actually much more difficult to address. There, you really have to think about how businesses can reform themselves to utilize the skills of the people who are there and create specific training to turn the people who are available into the people they need. And, you know, one way of thinking about that at the super high level is you can go on any of the major job websites and see what are the five most common computer programming languages. Yeah. And then if you look at the locations where those jobs are, you'll get approximately five cities. Okay. On the other hand, if you go into the sort of more mundane jobs that people actually typically end up in, like repairing air conditioners or doing electrical work in people's homes, or going into a restaurant, that skill set tends to be much more specific to the business and much less generic. And so it's creating a better match between the businesses in an area and the people in an area that will really allow us to reemploy the vast bulk of displaced people.
I've read some stats before. I don't have them in front of me, but I've read some stats that said people are moving less for work, that they stay in the same place. Do you think that affects, how people are skilling up or, you know, finding new jobs is more likely?
Yeah, what it definitely affects is their ability to utilize training to find jobs. If you go back to the prior displacements, they tended to be fairly organized in their geographic structure. What do I mean by that? You had the people on the coast moving to the Midwest to farm. You had people moving into Chicago and Detroit to the factories. So basically what the structure of those displacements were is that there was some positive revolution in productivity. And then you'd see a new revolution of some new type of factory, new type of business. They would open up to hire, and that would cause a migration to those jobs. So for instance, one of my grandfathers came here because of the garment industry opening in New York. Another came here because of the coal mines opening in Pennsylvania and massively hiring into those jobs. Today, if you think about the sort of global spectrum of new job creation, there's no equivalent to that. There is no place that's open to hire, right? Instead, what you see is a lot of corporations looking in detail at available workforces and thinking about if they can redesign their training programs and businesses to utilize those workforces. Great example of that is the way the automobile industry moved into the southeast of the United States. They basically went along the interstate corridor. They looked for concentrations of available workers. They created training programs. They built factories to the available labor and did some external hiring. That's much more the modern job model than we have mines come work here.
By the way, my father moved from a farm in Arkansas to outside of Chicago to work in factories. He was going to go to Detroit to be an auto worker, stopped and never left.
That's right. And if you look at the reverse dysphorias, when the Rust Belt hit the United hit the Midwest of the U.S., what you saw was younger workers moving to the Southwest and for the new jobs in California for the new jobs. You do occasionally see those kinds of migrations as well, but those tend to be primarily young prime-age workers.
A lot of people want to stay in their hometown or their community. They have a lot of roots with family, church, just history. So is that where smaller businesses can come in to help fill some of that need?
Well, there's a couple of places. It's actually almost easier to think about it from the perspective of where do big programs work versus where it's small. Okay. Big programs tend to work where there's a major shortage of labor in a new industry. They also tend to work where there's a major sort of flip in the available skill sets, and that tends to bring in large numbers of young workers, okay? Whether it's the information revolution or the agricultural revolution or the development of the factory, you typically had this giant gap, and you had a bunch of young people move into that gap. Today, what you more have is churn in location, where you have a lot of businesses redesigning the business so that it needs fewer people. This is certainly endemic through major corporate America and major corporate Europe. And when you're trying to find jobs for those individuals, right, it's much more likely to be a associated small business providing a service that utilizes some of the knowledge they already have, but repackaging in a new context, and much more willing to deal with the fact they're not a prime age worker, that they don't necessarily want to work the same number of hours, or their training isn't already in place. The other place we also see small business very important is bringing sort of the social mobility into the equation. When you look at very young workers who maybe didn't graduate high school at the top of their class or didn't graduate at all, who went to community college and struggled, small businesses tend to be much better able to and much more willing to bring those people into the workforce than large corporations. So that typically, if we're looking at older displaced workers or younger, less perfect workers, small business plays a much bigger role in bringing those people into the workforce. Where corporations still dominate and probably always will dominate is that recent college graduate, prime working age, willing to relocate worker. Corporations clearly dominate in that zone.
We're speaking with Steve Strongen of Goldman Sachs Global Investments. This is Work in Progress, and I'm Ramona Schindelheim. We'll be right back. future of work is changing. Are you ready? If you're not yet familiar with Working Nation, let me tell you a little about us. We're a nonprofit media company made up of seasoned journalists, producers, business leaders, and educators. Our mission is to bring awareness to the impact changing technology is having on the workforce. A lot of people are talking about the problem. At Working Nation, we're focused on solutions. We're looking at the programs that are out there, and we're talking to the people who are working to close the skills gap, the gap between the skills employers need in a workforce and the skills workers actually have. We do this through Working Nation videos, articles, live events, and of course, podcasts. All of these and more can be found on our website, workingnation.com, your source for all information on the future of work. We're talking about how entrepreneurship can drive job creation with Steve Strongin of Goldman Sachs. The number of billion-dollar corporations that started in a dorm room or garage is legendary. Think Facebook, Amazon, Harley-Davidson, even Disney. They were all small companies once. But small business creation has slowed in the last 20 years. Why is that?
There's a lot of barriers that have come into place. There's a lot more regulations. Financing has gotten much tougher. When I was in the early 80s, when I was coming of age, there was a running joke that if you needed financing, all you had to do was open your mailbox. There would be 6 credit card applications in your mailbox.
I think that's still the case.
Not really. Particularly if you're a young person today. Much harder to get a credit card. Much harder to get a second mortgage. Much harder to get that seed capital to start today. Secondly, almost no matter what you're producing, the number of licenses, certifications necessary to sell it has climbed. And both of those things make it much tougher for a small business relative to a big business to meet needs.
So for the idea of the capital, do you have any thoughts on how that could be loosened up, access to that capital?
I think we're going to have to rethink the entire way we approach lending and lending risk. Post the financial crisis, we rebuilt the financial system essentially to not take risk. And there is no way that a startup with a small asset base and an owner who doesn't have a lot of savings is going to be viewed as a low-risk loan. So if the goal of the financial system is not to take risk, the financial system is going to have a lot of trouble financing those new businesses.
And college kids in particular come out of college with massive debt. And how do you feel about that? What should the government be doing about that debt that lingers for a lifetime?
So I think the whole student loan question has radically changed the way that all young people can approach the job market. It's forcing them into looking at starting wages and base salaries and secure employers to dominate the choice because it's the only way they can deal with their student debt. So their ability to do lower paid jobs, public service, startups, take risk, all of the various non-mainstream jobs are tougher for them to go to. There's lots of proposals out there to change it. All of them would feed into each other. You know, if you had national servers that canceled part of your student debt, that would also increase your ability to start a business after you finish your service. Or alternatively, if the student debt was structured in a way that it didn't hang around for life, that would also make it easier for young entrepreneurs to start businesses. That just goes, I think, to the general issue that post-financial crisis, we've tried to make sure the last place there's risk is the financial system, and that simply restricts access to capital and forces people into low-risk occupations, low-risk business decisions, and all of that lowers the return on all of those decisions as well.
So as a whole, kind of in conclusion, do you feel like we're at a point of where addressing the issue enough, or do you think it's going to the changes and the displacement's going to accelerate?
So I think we're facing two opposing trends that we're not yet dealing well with. One is that technology is making it easier to create, start, and prosper in new businesses. But secondly, we are making it harder for individuals to take those risks. And so that risk is being essentially centered in mid and larger corporations. And one of the outcomes of that, which is I think the most dangerous for society, is it means at the individual level, we've lowered social and economic mobility. You know, sometimes when we talk about social and economic mobility, we talk about it as though it is a risk-free process, and somehow if policy was organized, we could all march forward. If you look at the real history of economic mobility, it inevitably is about startups. It inevitably is about ideas and gumption and ambition. And to the extent that we make it harder for that individual to do that, we damage economic and social mobility in a way that does real damage to the fabric of our society and also to our communities, because it was those entrepreneurs that took their communities with them. Right? You know, what would Detroit have been without the auto industry? What would Silicon Valley have been without the computer industry? Those young entrepreneurs also created communities that did incredibly well. And so as we reduce the ability of people to take risk, we damage both the individual and the community ability for mobility.
Work in Progress is produced by Working Nation, your source on the future of work. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, and we've been talking about the role of small businesses in jobs creation with Steve Strongen of Goldman Sachs Global Investments. To find out more, visit our website, workingnation.com. Next week, we'll talk with Marcy Albahar of Encore.org about why a multi-generational workforce is a strong workforce and how ageism can go both ways.
We're all older or younger than someone else at every stage of our life, and I think we all have a tendency to be ageist towards those people who are older and younger than us.
To hear more about the future of work and workers, subscribe to Work in Progress wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Annie Chelsea, and executive producers Joan Lynch and Melissa Panzer. Our theme music was composed by Lee Rossevere and licensed under Creative Commons Attribution License 4.0 International. See you next time.